Hi, and welcome to the About Her show. I am Sangeeta Relan, an educationist, a writer, and a lifelong learner. I also run an e-magazine for women. This podcast is about trailblazing women and their journeys. Women who have broken many a barrier, many a stereotype to realize their potential. If they can do it, so can you. We live in a world full of diversity and differences. This means we are surrounded by people of different backgrounds, cultures, religions, races, beliefs, abilities, and genders. When faced with these differences, what is the best approach to follow? Should we ignore them or accept and embrace them? Our guest this week, Pooja Sharma, strongly believes that we should not only embrace these diversities, but also strive to build an inclusive world, an inclusive dunya, where everyone is welcome and valued for what they bring to the table. Let us talk to Pooja and understand how she is working towards building an inclusive dunya. Hi, Pooja, and welcome to the About Her show. Now, this is a show where we get, you're welcome, we get women achievers who we call women trailblazers to share the story of their lives with us, to tell us about the challenges they have faced, the ups and downs, the victories, successes, everything, so that the listeners, especially the women listeners, can get motivated and inspired by their stories and, you know, get out of whatever is holding them back from doing what they want to do, you know, follow their dreams, pursue their passions, or whatever they want to do. And eventually, we want to build a community of women who are there to support, empower, be there for each other, mentor each other. So that's the whole idea behind the About Her show. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. And thank you for having me in that good company.
You're most welcome. So fine, let's dive in and tell us a little bit about your childhood, your early life, and how those life experiences, you know, they influenced the path in life that you have taken, chosen, whatever.
Thank you for that question. In my case, it's actually quite obvious because I'm an army kid and people instantly kind of realize as an army child, as an army family, we kind of had a nomadic life, not as much as some of the other families, but we moved around a fair bit. I was part of a 5-strong family. So I have 2 brothers, both older than me. And at some points we have various dogs and somewhere I think that experience moving from place to place, moving schools and really kind of coming back home to a secure family environment kind of shaped me to be who I am. And so I'm quite adaptable, but I love traveling. I love exploring. So as we move places, every new place we move to, my mother would ensure that we explored the history of the place, the heritage of the place. But at the same time, there was always that sense of home to come back to. That was the 5 of us and our curtains. So in that sense, I've grown up to be quite adaptable. I am a bit of an explorer at heart, whether it's with knowledge or with places or with people or ideas. And at the same time, I am a bit of a homebody. So I love to come home to a room full of yellow light.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's warm.
Yeah,
even I like it. That, you know, gives that warmth. And that, you know, feeling of cozy and
coziness. Yes. So that's my favorite place in the world. So, so I think that experience was very formative in the way I look at the world. I look at, I think being able to change every 2-3 years, like, you know, a lot of people feel the need for it, but I think that also leads to a lot of growth. So I don't necessarily always feel the need to make a major switch, but I'm always looking for growth. So I think it's also made me quite growth minded. And your question was, how did it shape your path in life? I think it makes one a little bit braver about exploring newer chapters. And so I've made a career switch 3 or 4 times. I've lived in 2 different countries. I've lived in multiple different cities within India. And I think all of that comes from those early childhood experiences.
Yeah, I'm sure, because that I think that brought about flexibility in your approach. You know, you're not rigid about being with, new people or new places. So that, yes, definitely. So tell me, growing up, did you have any aspirations, any dreams that this is what I want to become when I grow up? Like, many of us have had somebody wanted to become a doctor, somebody wanted to become an air hostess, like I wanted to be, fly in the air and stuff like that. So did you have any of those?
So I think the first aspiration that I probably remember, like all children, I've gone through a few. The first one I remembered was that I wanted to be the first female army officer. And because I was growing up in an army family, I just loved the idea. And as soon as there were army officers allowed, I was like, okay, wo nahi karna. But the second one that's kind of stayed with me, the two that have stayed with me, and I think I'm finally kind of in a space where I'm living that in some way, shape, or form, was my mother was a special educator. So seeing her and seeing her work, I think I was very keen to follow in her footsteps. And it was something that my dad, who was a practical person, said, "Nay, sign up to do your CA, because that's a more practical career option." So I'm from a generation where, you followed conventional career options. But I think wanting to work in the disability space, wanting to work in education and trying to make an influence, like, some kind of an impact there was important to me. It's something that I came to in a very circuitous way later on. The other aspiration that I somewhat grew into in my later teens was everyone thought I wrote well, and I thought the career path for someone like that was to become a journalist. And I think that was that kind of came crashing down when I got a pretty poor score in my English exam in class 12, and that's something that was a surprise, but it's also not something that you could rectify. And in a way, that worked out all right because I like the journey, how it shaped up from there. But those were the three distinct roles that I aspired to when I was growing up.
All right. So I think somewhere, you may not, in a sense, follow that definite path and become who you wanted to become as a child. But somewhere I think it all comes together, when you kind of grow up and do different things. So some aspect, from somewhere will come and, just make it one whole. Anyway, so coming to your work, what you currently do, so, creating an inclusive, equal opportunities world and the inclusive dunya. So could you elaborate on that and tell us what you do?
Sure. So this is an initiative that we've been running for about 2.5 years. We started in August 2021. So the context I didn't mention earlier when we were talking about my growing up years was that I have a brother who has intellectual disability. So it's an issue area that we've kind of experienced as a family all my life. And it was something that, and that is also why my mother was a special educator. So it's something that was, it was a cause that was close to my heart. And when COVID happened, I just felt like not enough people within the social sector were talking about this community and the needs of this community, given they were at a high risk of, high health risk, and also left at home, not being able to go to schools. So we started this as an awareness initiative. I ran an awareness campaign in my personal capacity in 2020 to realize that there was a lot of need because we, I spoke to about 100 people on a daily basis, because these were the people who were kind of participating in the campaign with us. And I realized that there was a real lack of understanding, not a lack of desire to understand, but a lack of understanding of what the issues were and how one could show up as an ally. So Inclusive Duniya is an initiative to address those two questions, where through an illustrated comic, which sits at the heart of this program, we illustrate the lived experience of various neurodiversities, because this is not something you can simulate for people. And through those stories, we also showcase how you can show up as a friend and an ally, because a lot of people would say, ye to kisi aur ka kaam hai, sarkar ko kuch karna chahiye, NGO ko kuch karna chahiye. But this is our way of also saying that, in really small ways, every day, sitting where you sit, you can do something, and you can show up as an ally, and you can make your own inclusive duniya. So the name comes from saying, Sangeeta ki, the question is, what would Sangeeta's inclusive duniya look like? And And the invitation is for you to think about, you know, what would you do to make your world more inclusive? And then with the program, we try and support in whatever way we can, you know, whether it is with knowledge resources or sort of pointing you in the right direction to help you figure that out. So that's what the program looks like. We do content. We run conversations to seed the idea of inclusivity and invite participants to think about how they might want to show up as allies. And then we help build their capacity to do projects if they want to do something concretely.
And what is the kind of response that you have got? How do people react to such an initiative?
Very well, actually. And that's what surprised me. So like I mentioned, I ran an awareness campaign in August 2020 my personal capacity. So when we launched Inclusive Duniya as a comic, we actually launched it as a 21-part series, which was meant to be the second awareness campaign in the next year, you know, 12 months later, August 2021. But the response to the comic was actually very good from within our community. And by within our community, I mean the neurodiversity community, the allies and the advocates. And that was because I think one thing people liked was that we were talking about the disabilities in a very factual manner. So it's fact first, but it's respectful. And it showcases without any virtue signaling or shaming. It actually also showcases how people can show up, appreciating fully well that people do not necessarily understand. So what you do not understand, you cannot engage with. So I think the response from within the community was very good, which is where, you know, moms started coming and saying, can we use your content to build awareness in our community? Because my daughter is not necessarily invited to play in the playground. So can I use these comics to actually talk to the other kids? And that made us realize we were onto something. Mm-hmm. So we continued putting out the comic, and we currently have about 160 plus stories. And once we saw that the advocates, you know, the parent advocates and the sibling advocates were using the stories, we were like, actually, could we design this for people other than the, you know, families and siblings to be using it? Because when you read something, learn about it and teach it, that kind of rewires. So then we started engaging volunteers from schools and colleges to go and run these conversations with younger children. And that is a second audience that we work with. And with them as well, the response has actually been pretty good, because it is an issue that either they've barely heard about because someone within their, you know, wider circle lives with a neurodiversity, or they don't understand at all and they find it very accessible. And because, you know, the Gen Z and the Gen Alpha are actually very conscious and social justice oriented, they will show up for causes that they believe in. And we do feel that we get a pretty positive response with people signing up to be champions for the cause.
Wonderful.
So it's going all right.
Great, great. So I think, you know, when you create that awareness, you will find like-minded people. Because no matter what is happening in the world around us, but when you kind of, I think, press the right button in the right way, you will get the right response as well. Okay, so Pooja, of course, this has been a tough journey for you. I'm sure, like anything that we start, you know, it's not never easy. So any challenges in particular that you faced, and definitely because of your gender? So if you could tell us.
Definitely because of my gender.
Otherwise, always.
So I think there were a lot of challenges to begin with. And as with anything new, so this is not, you know, while I'm a sibling and it's a cause that I cared about, unlike parents, I think siblings do not necessarily pick up the skills or the vocabulary along the way. Parents necessarily need to upskill themselves. So when I wanted to start working in this space, I think the first challenge or thing that I had to surmount was that I needed to go from having a sister's perspective to actually having a professional's perspective. Mm-hmm. And that was a bit of a journey, because there is, you know, it's a cause that we care about. There is a lot of emotion that's associated with it, because obviously I don't think the state of affairs is right. And for me to be able to sort of process that and say, I need to be, you know, when I sit down to work, it's a professional that needs to sit down to work. So that separation and also developing that sort of a perspective and knowledge was about the sector, the dynamics, the needs beyond our families was a journey for me. And especially because all of this started through COVID. So I was sitting here on this desk through the lockdown, trying to connect with people that, I'd never met before, and having really personal conversations about things that trouble them. So I think That was one. The second, obviously, kind of leaving a corporate job. So, I was on a path to somewhere doing reasonably well, and making that switch in my late 30s was a call that a lot of people did not necessarily, a lot of people within my immediate circle did not necessarily understand. Because I mean, like that's just about when you sort of start hitting the senior management sort of a level, and they were like, why are you quitting your job, and why do you want to do this? You do not have a plan, and not having a plan. So being able to create that space for myself where I could explore was without these external voices influencing how I felt. Obviously, if you care about people, it does influence how you feel about the project, as well as, I think motivations as well. So for me, I think the one question that I also dealt with was, what is my motivation for doing this? Why do I want to do this? So making that switch from corporate to the social sector was the second one. And third, you ask about the gender. I think at least within this sector, it's a primarily female-led sector, because and that is part of that is a function of what I see as a fundamental issue as well. That it's usually mums who need to upskill and step up because there isn't enough capacity, there aren't isn't enough professional influence of the sector, people who are independent of the cause, who are not impacted directly by the cause. So if it's mums who are stepping up and setting up organizations, it's a very female-driven sector. So with in that context, I think I did not face that challenge, but I think it's interesting because as a so I'm single, and I think that's kind of interesting that for a lot of people who work in an unfunded sector, and what is largely an unfunded sector, it's they are part of a couple, and there is something to fall back on. So as a female, a single female, I think because we also, and this kind of goes back to the history of the last 20 years of working, there is a gender pay gap. There are challenges that you work with. I do feel like, there is, I have to be more prudent about, how I chart out this journey as well. And so that's one thing I've had to work with and get through. And the last one, which I think I may have experienced briefly, but not really, was when I was exploring the problem and thinking about, what sort of a solution would I want to create. I was also spending a fair bit of time in villages around Gurgaon, because Gurgaon is where I live, and I was going out into the villages around Gurgaon to try and understand what the issues over there are, because I felt like in the urban centers, people in due course, there will be access to services. But what about in rural and peri-urban areas? And it's when I was going there that I actually realized that difference in gender norms. So, a woman showing up alone or trying to go to an Anganwadi, trying to meet people, you always needed like a male volunteer alongside or somebody to help open the doors. Or, there was some commentary around, gaadi speed bump ke upar se ja rahi hai, so the guy will say, "Main drive kar leta hun." And these are like very stereotypical things that one probably doesn't experience in living in a city like Delhi or Gurgaon, but definitely in the hinterland, you do experience it.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Yes, of course. They will also take a while to kind of catch up, and I'm sure they will. But yes, you do have to face this. So tell me, someone who wants to get into creating an inclusive world, and here I'm talking about various kinds of inclusivities. So, say I'm a young girl and I want to do something about it. How is it, what kind of a mindset do you need, or what kind of effort do you need to put in? I mean, it's not something that you can easily do. So, I mean, what do you think? How does one kind of start getting into this?
Into creating a more inclusive world around yourself.
Because
I
sometimes
think.
you've grown up in an environment where you've seen, maybe as a woman, especially you've seen you are, discriminated against, or, people don't appreciate differences or diversity. So, how do you kind of get?
So I think our response to that, Sangeeta, with our stories and every conversation as well, is that you may not know, when neurodiversity is concerned, because I mean, inclusion is inclusion, and I think the principles of that remain the same.
Absolutely.
But and But we take a neurodiversity lens to this. So our thing is we cannot actually simulate like we can't blindfold you and make you feel like what does visual impairment feel like. But we all know what exclusion feels like, which is what you're saying, that as a woman you've kind of been discriminated against, and it does not even take active discrimination. It can be something quite subtle as well, that you've joined a new school. So I'll give you an example. We moved schools quite a bit, but if I went to a new school, there was always trepidation in the first week. You know, will I meet friends? Will I actually meet people? Will I be the only one sitting in the classroom eating my sandwich by myself at break time? And these are things that we've all experienced in some way, shape, or form. We've been expected, you know, we're expecting to be called to a party, not being called. We've gone somewhere and felt like, you know, we were not included in the conversation. And these are really small things that we can do on a daily basis. But I think what ends up happening, which is where we kind of step in and say, we will provide you some bit of an understanding, where we understand who the other party is, it's easier to make those connects. So it's easier for me to sort of open up the circle and say, Sangeeta, you're a woman, and let's actually start a woman network. Or, you know, if you're sitting around a board table and somebody, you know, is not giving enough airtime to a woman colleague, I would actually sort of say, I would love to hear what you're saying. But where we do not understand what the difference is and why people may be left out, we need to make more conscious attempt to understand that difference. And this is where we sort of say you get on that allyship journey. The first step on the allyship journey is to try and understand the other. And that's where the othering stops disappearing, because you realize that we have more in common than otherwise. So what will it take to create a more inclusive world? I think approaching it, knowing that we all have the same motivations, we all want to be in the circle, irrespective of how our behavior manifests, and widening that circle to make that happen. And where you see differences, you know, whether it's a cultural difference. So when we work in a corporate setup, we all go through a cultural training almost on a yearly basis, right? So how do we then kind of also understand how different neurotypes impact one's thinking, and put in that effort, maybe put in a few hours to learn, and then try and weave that into your day-to-day. And then it's a journey from there on. And obviously, if you want to get on that journey, reach out to us.
Oh yes, of course. So what I understand is that as a woman, that is why probably you find more women here also, because women do bear the, you know, brunt of being singled out or facing discrimination. And of course, as mothers also, you know, you're more sensitive to the needs of your child. So probably all these things come together, and that is the reason why you find more women here.
Maybe, but you know, there aren't so many women who are not directly impacted by the cause who actually work in this space. But you know, so if I were to talk about all the social sector leaders right now within this sector, I think my take is that it's probably because of traditional gender norms. So it's usually a mother who's a primary caregiver, and when there is a child with additional needs, it is a mother, you know, who is kind of saying, okay, let me take a longer break from work. Let me actually learn what their needs are. Let me take them to the therapist. Let me play that part-time therapist at home. And I think women kind of grow into that. And the ones who are more enterprising or have the wherewithal will end up saying, why do it only for my child? Let me do it for 10 other children in my neighborhood. Actually, let me set up a school. And it kind of, you know, for a lot of people, the journey goes like that. So the oldest organization in the sector was something that was started by a parent, and even some of the youngest ones are the ones that are started by parents and now siblings too.
So that's what actually I meant, that this is how it kind of
Yeah.
comes.
Yeah, because there is a gender norm to, you know, the roles that we play. Yeah.
So tell me, of course, with all the work and, you know, everything else in life, there are days when you are kind of low and not as, you know, like kind of just going, wanting to go out there and do it all. So what are your ways of coping up with a day that's not so bright and not so cheerful?
There are definitely days like that. I recently saw this meme on social media where somebody was talking about, I think, their life, or referring to the song "Aaj Phir Jeene Ki Tamanna Hai, Aaj Phir Marne Ka Irada Hai." And I was just like, that's the entrepreneurial journey. Like, on a daily basis, you have a high point in the day where you feel like, this is amazing and this is awesome, and we're cracking it. And then there's a day which feels like, you know, there's a moment which feels like it's so tedious that, you know, what was I even thinking? But I think the fact that both of those moments sort of co-occur on the same day helps. that you have, you know, when you hit that low point, you just know you need to power through because it is a mission, you know, so you've got to remind yourself of the why, you know, why are you here? Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
And then by God's grace, there are enough opportunities that actually feel like, you know, there is a good enough reason to be here and doing this. And those high points actually power one through. But I think it's also important, you know, to create some time for self-care.
Definitely.
In all of this. And I don't mean self-care in a very TikTok-y way, but genuinely, like, you know, make sure that one's own cup is full because
yeah,
it is not the easiest journey. And it's very, very important to nourish your own self. And for every individual that looks different. So for me, I think taking out some time to meditate, go for a walk, spend some time with my dog, cooking, traveling a little bit, exploring, you know, new places. I think all of those things fill me up. And that's what I do.
Great. Yeah, so it's so true. If your cup isn't full, then how can you, you know, spread any happiness anywhere? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So we go through life, you know, taking hits and, you know, facing all kinds of situations, which experiences basically, which make us learn things. You know, sometimes your parents may keep telling you, but, you know, till the time you don't practically experience something, you don't learn, right? I think that's true of all of us. So any particular you know, thing that you've learned in your lifetime, some of those learnings that you would like to share?
I've had a lot of learnings. That's a fully lived life. I think maybe my greatest learning came from this 2 year period back, like about almost a decade ago.
Yeah.
So I lived in London at the time, and a lot of my family, I mean all my family were here. Nobody was in the UK. And I was going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. And my way of kind of dealing with that was almost leaning into my work.
Okay.
And it was it kind of worked well until it got a little bit bumpy on the work front as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point in time, I think the greatest I mean, I went through whatever journey I went through, but knowing that it's very important to have a strong core. And knowing that one's identity should not be associated with external factors,
yeah.
Whether it's one's job or relationships or what one does, that, you know, one's identity really has to be about, you know, what's inside and yeah. Nourishing that inside. I think that was probably my greatest learning, hard-earned lesson, but one that stands me in good stead. And my wish really is that we spend more time with our children while they're in school, you know, while we're talking a whole lot about social emotional learning, to really kind of help them discover who they are and approach life in the world from that place.
Yeah.
So I would encourage young people to invest the time in figuring themselves out and be driven by their inner voice.
Okay. So Pooja, since we are talking about young people, any tips that you would like to share with the young girls of today who are on the threshold of their personal and professional lives? I mean, what do you think are some of the things that they need to keep in mind, and especially in the light of what you said about, you know, having your identity, maintaining your identity, because you don't know, you know, life is full of uncertainties. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, even in the next second for that matter. So anything that you know, tell them, advise them to keep in mind?
I think, so through some work that I've done over the last 5-6 years, so there is my personal experience, but especially through some work and research that I've looked at over the last 5-6 years, I realized because of our cultural norms and the gender norms, a lot of women don't aspire in the same way. You know, there are differences between boys and girls, but a lot of girls do not have as big aspirations or wants of their own life as the boys do.
Yeah.
And what they have, they immediately start minimizing. So, you know, they will say, doctor banna hai, but doctor ki jagah nurse bhi ban sakte hain. And, you know, because that's the easier thing to do. So one thing I would actually say is dream big. You know, don't there is a lot of chatter, but don't minimize your dreams. You know, if there is something, the world is your oyster. Like you could go and you could go and do whatever you wanted. Be bold in your own vision for your life and in your pursuit of that vision. Be kind, but be bold. You know,
That
don't hold yourself back.
yeah.
And don't hold yourself back on anything. Like, not, I think I started with career because it's very important. I think we get a sense of identity, we get a sense of purpose, and we also get a sense of financial security from our work. And I think it's very important to have all of those three to have a solid base in life. But I think that same principle of being bold and not holding back applies to every aspect of life, you know, whether it's relationships, where you want to live, what you want to wear. Be true to yourself.
Yeah, that I think is very important. And yes, like you said, you know, the security, the financial independence in that sense, emotional independence, I think those are also very, very critical because, like I said, you don't know what's in store, you know, when you in life. Okay. So, Pooja, a lot of women now, of course, you know, despite the gender norms and despite, you know, the stereotypes and all of that, they are, you know, kind of surging and striving and not only striving, but getting to do things that they want and not only doing them, but doing them very well, where they've made a name for themselves. So how do you think the world is taking to such women? And, you know, and when I talk about the world, I'm talking about men and women both. How does the world look at a woman who's done it all?
I don't know what done it all means. I think it means different things to different people. But if we're talking about, you know, the generic understanding, I think the world looks at it in, and this is my understanding, you know, if people are looking at it from a distance, they're probably looking at it with a lot of admiration.
Okay.
Because this is, you know, from a distance you see this picture of a, you know, stereotypically successful woman.
Yeah.
But all of us are human, and you know, it's always, you know, mixed bag, good, bad. These are all value judgments and on one's own perspective. But as one gets closer, I think the deviation from what's expected out of gender roles, I think, you know, starts resulting in, you know, from something as small as snide comments to really saying, but you really can't have it all. And because you just said, you know, because they have it all, but you know, even that judgment that you can't have it all, because look, you know, so and so has a great career, but they don't have, maybe they don't have a family, or maybe they have a family and they don't have enough time to do things for their children, or you know, they're not there for the soccer match. So I think as people get closer and start seeing the nuance and the detail, there is like some judgment. But I also want to kind of question what a successful woman looks like, because when we think of a successful woman, like, you know, the first image that comes to mind is somebody who's successful on the outside, but we never actually ever think about our mom who was a homemaker and raised three solid human beings. And that is not the first picture that pops to mind. So I would also kind of question, you know, how does someone look at a successful woman? We need to broaden our definition of what success looks like.
I think
You
so
know,
success
are
is
you?
what you want to do. So if you have managed to do so, that is very important. So if I want to have a career, I've done it. If I don't want a career, I've done that too. So it is. But yes, when you look at the society, they are looking at women in terms of their, you know, careers and how maybe, you know, whatever they're doing in their professional lives. So when they look at success, they are judging it there. But to my mind, it is success everywhere. You
It
know,
is success everywhere.
able to do what I want to do. That is,
Yeah,
yeah, that's.
exactly. Exactly. But I think we also need to broaden that definition. Like, you know, I'll give you an example. A few months ago, I had a well-meaning uncle who came over and said something to the effect that we expected that you'd be, you know, you're so bright, and we expected you'd be so successful. And, you know, I was like, Mises are the successful corner. Like, I spend every single minute doing what I want to do. But, you know, I know it was well intentioned, but this is where I think I started thinking more actively as well, or about what the definition of success is. You know, I think we have this very, you know, very single definition of success in the professional life, which somehow is valued in money. And you know how big of a car did you drive? But what you just said, you know, if you've chosen a role and if you've chosen a goal for yourself and you're fulfilling that to the best of your ability and you're happy, then that is success. And I think when we look at women with that broader definition of success, I think there is admiration. But we need to broaden that definition. We're very far from it.
So, Pooja, you have done it, and I am also doing it in a way, which is what I call the midlife rebooting. When you decide to switch careers, and though I haven't actually switched, I'm still doing what I started out to do in life. But you see a lot of people who are doing this nowadays. You know, they started their lives doing something, and then, you know, late 30s, early 40s, whatever, even as late as, you know, their 50s, they decide to do something else, which could be absolutely different from what they started doing in their lives initially. So, what do you have to say about that?
I think so. First of all, I congratulate everyone who gets on that journey, because somewhere, I mean, I think when we say it's a midlife reboot, you know, we associate that with some kind of a crisis, but really, you know, I think it is. The first for a couple of decades of our life are about kind of building a foundation and discovering and learning. And somewhere in our 40s is really when we get to a place when we can contribute back meaningfully based on everything that we've learned. So for people who take a pause at that time and think, you know, who am I and what do I have to offer back to the world? And coming from a place of, you know, maybe greater financial security, from a desire to find more meaning in life and offering the skill sets back in a different environment and being bold enough to start again, because having that beginner's mindset in is very, very important. Like, you know, everything that one associated, you know, or felt very good about, it gets taken away. So also having that beginner's mindset is something that takes courage. And I admire people who get on that journey, and we need more of those people, because typically when people do that, they are looking at career options or work options which are personally fulfilling, but also more value additive to the world. You know, they're not necessarily building a new, you know, consumer product, which also has value, but things like, you know, with conversations that you're starting and encouraging other women, this is meaningful and it does impact people. And that more, that greater impact orientation in the work of more people is what will change the world for the better. So I think of it with great admiration, and I congratulate everyone.
Because see, earlier we did not see a lot of this. I'm sure earlier also people had aspirations other than, you know, what they were doing. But I think you're right. Maybe the mindset was a bit closed. We did not have so much of awareness, and also the financial part as well. You know, I can only follow my passion if I have, you know, enough money, because if I can't take care of my basic needs, my passion really, you know, like will not mean anything to me. So I think that is there. There is a lot of awareness. There is some amount of flexibility also, because people around are also, I think, more open to seeing people do, you know, different things and let go of what they were doing earlier, right?
Debatable based on what my uncle came and told me. But yes, you're right. You're right. The more opportunities for, I think, people being open, but also for people who are making a switch from the corporate to the social sector, the fact that people are willing to take in leaders who bring a very different mindset and absorb them in that environment, I think that also offers opportunities.
It does. It does. Okay. So, Pooja, like everyone else, not only a woman, I think everyone has to juggle different roles in life. You know, sometimes there are like 10 things that you have to do and you don't know which one to start doing or, you know, which role to play at that time, what is more important. So, any secrets that you have of how you manage or how you juggle the various balls in your life?
So first of all, I think the first thing that I had to do was try and pare that down to only the balls that I wanted to keep up in the air. I think that was the first thing that was very, very important, because when I came back to India, life in India can be quite full, so you have to be choiceful about what you spend your time on. But then now I think because work can be quite busy for me. And you know, I live fairly close to my family. I think the second thing that I've done is I think, you know, outside of work, I want to be a friend. And so I'm not thinking of my various roles as a sister role or a daughter role or a, I think of me saying, how can I show up as a friend for people? And who are those people that I want to invest in? I mean, like the core relationships that I want to nourish and support. Prioritizing that is very important. And then the third thing for your own sanity is being kind, like to your own self. So make the time for things that are important for your own self, for people that you care about, and for work that you care about, and create a life that you like. But if you fall short in some way, if you don't hit 100% on either of those, any of those goals, then don't be unkind and punish yourself on it. Tomorrow's a new day, get back on the horse again.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's very important. You may want to do 10,000 things, but if you haven't been able to do them on a particular day, then yes, it's okay. There is always another day.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can.
There is always another day, but also think about how you could bring down those 10,000 to 10.
Yeah, that too. See, it depends on you. What is important? I mean, how you prioritize, yes. And like you said, just pick the balls that mean something to you. You can't be doing everything. Yeah, that's true.
Can't be doing everything. Only so many hours in the day.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
So I don't have a definite answer, Sangeeta, for where, like a vision for where I want to see myself in 10 years' time. But I think in 10 years' time, I want to be able to look back and have enjoyed this journey.
Okay.
Feel like I've spent my time creating something worthwhile, both with Inclusive Duniya and my work, as well as with the people and the relationships in my life, and hopefully nourishing some hobbies that I've not had the time for so far. So, kind of growing into those as well. And hopefully being a kinder, centered, healthy in every possible way, kind of a human being.
That's wonderful. That's a whole set of things, a whole lot of things that you want to do, which is, I think, what it is. Ultimately, I think it's your happiness that is prime. That is the most important thing. We all need to look out for that. And if whatever makes us happy, that is, I think, what the future should look like for us. So
Yes,
finally,
and
Pooja.
thank you for saying that.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. So finally, Pooja, a question that I ask every woman: can a woman have it all? So this is your way. It is like, a canvas for you to paint and splash with whatever colors you want to do it with.
A woman can have it all, yes.
Yeah.
So I would give two answers. I do think a woman can have it all based on what their definition of all is what we were talking about,
Yeah.
If we've chosen our roles and we've chosen our goals, then, and that's our definition of all, then yes, you can give yourself and work towards that all. But also kind of recognizing that, we ask this question of women, can a woman have it all? But we never ask this question of a man. And if a man is successful in that traditional sense, then they professionally, then they're probably not spending that much time with their families, or they're probably not there for their children's soccer matches, or they're probably not there when the parent needs to go to a hospital. So if you're not asking that question of a man, why should we ask that question of a woman?
I agree.
But also, like, define what your all looks like. It doesn't have to, our version of, what we want does not necessarily need to be the same as what we expect a man to do.
Yeah.
Every individual should get a chance to choose. And yes, in that sense, a woman can have it all.
And also, I think men, I think our horizons are broader, wider. We do various things, maybe because of the gender role and all that, but also I think because the women have a greater capacity, a far greater capacity to multitask and take on various things. A man, say, yes, so other than the work and maybe one hobby somewhere and family, they don't really do much. We could be doing 10,000 things, in a day. So for, like you said, of course, your all, knowing your all is very important. And then getting to choose your all. Not only knowing, but getting to choose that this is
Getting
what,
to choose.
yes, my all looks like. So I think we don't ask men these questions because this question because I don't think they can have I mean that big an all as women can have. So what do you say about that?
I think there may be some truth in that today. I mean, I think there is a difference between, I think male brains, female brains, but I think that a lot of it is also conditioning.
Yes.
So when we say we do a lot of other things, Sangeeta, a lot of it is because from the outset we're taught to say, you know, क्लास में फर्स्ट भी आना है, घर की डस्टिंग भी करनी है, वो तुम्हारा रिस्पॉन्सिबिलिटी है. और यू नो दैट, यू नो, इफ सो एंड सो कम्स एंड यू नो, बिकॉज ऑफ हाउ फीमेल्स आर वायर्ड, दैट फीमेल, यू नो, दैट फेमिनिन एनर्जी एज वेल, वी काइंड ऑफ relate and engage with the world in a different way. But I also think that this idea that, you know, because we are doing all of that, but we are also aspiring to the traditionally male goals or vision definition of success, we end up stretching ourselves too thin. So I think, you know, I mean, I think if we kind of drop that conditioning, maybe more men or, you know, other genders would also be choosing, you know, like a broader role. It's, I think they are also a victim of this patriarchal definition of, you know, the stereotypical male role. But equally, I think women, you know, while we can keep up a whole lot and we do have a sort of broader canvas that we play on, and more colors, but we should also sort of, you know, not feel the pressure to do it.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely no pressure. It is what I want. I get to choose. And then within that choice,
Yes.
yes, if I can do it all, then yes. So my
Yes.
understanding of that is that I get to choose what my all is.
And that is very, very important. That's very important.
That is important. Okay, Pooja, so thank you so much for being on the show. It was indeed wonderful and, you know, having you here, getting your perspective on so many different things. Like I always say and believe that every woman is like any other woman. We are all the same at the core. It's just that maybe our backgrounds, our, you know, initiation into the world or whatever it may be, our experiences may be different, but at the core, we are all the same. So it's wonderful, you know, because I ask the same set of questions of every woman, and believe me, the answers don't vary too much. We're all, I think, you know, we not only are we the same in every other way, but even our thought process, you know, is like you know, very, and this is like, you know, despite there being age barriers. I mean, I've even spoken to young girls who are 23, 24, and then women in their 60s and 70s and 30s and 40s. Basically, the views remain the same. That's actually wonderful and extremely heartening. So, yeah, thank you for being with us today.
I think just like you've said, across age barriers and across different backgrounds, at the core, we're all the same. I think it's important to recognize that it goes beyond women too. It goes beyond, you know, we have a diversity of backgrounds and the way we think, but at the core, we're all the same. So if we kind of started by engaging on that sameness and what we have in common and finding that common ground, we'd be able to sort of engage with any person with any kind of, you know, neurotype. And this is to answer your question, what can you do to create a more inclusive dunya? Know that there is common ground and explore that common ground as we do with women, and we create that community. Let's include others as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Tune in every Thursday for some more inspiring conversations with women trailblazers. If you like the show, follow us and you could leave a review to help us get better. You could even get in touch with us on any one of our social media handles.